question?
For the Q&A?
Wait, Q&A, oh, yeah, yeah. Q&A, don't leave.
No, we're not waiting.
No, all right.
Water.
Yeah.
Oh, hey,
Okay, let's go to a question from this young lady over here.
By talking about how Massachusetts changed. Now, I do not hear you looking at some of the younger candidates like Clay Pell or maybe Brett Smiley and saying, because they are new to the state and because they are both intelligent and visionary, why are you, in a sense, dismissing them instead of taking them more seriously?
I don't think I'm dismissing them, and I don't think we're dismissing any candidate. You will notice that we are the one news outlet that pretty much gives everyone equal access. I am saying that they're both a little wet between the ears, and that they've never been elected to anything. That doesn't mean they can't be. I'm just saying that, you know, your first time out to think that governor is an entry-level job or that mayor is an entry-level job, maybe should have run for the city council first before you want to be mayor. Maybe you should run for lieutenant governor before you want to be governor. I'm just pointing that out. I'm not saying that either of these folks can't win. I'll tell you, they're both smart. They're both hardworking. And Smiley's raised a pretty good amount of money. And, you know, Pell can go to the ATM or his wife's ATM and put together a very, very solid campaign. So I don't discount either of those folks.
Can I just add to that? I mean, it would be one thing if we had these old, decrepit people on the ticket, for example, the Democratic ticket. I mean, Angel Tavares and Gina Raimondo are young, accomplished people that ran for office, have been relatively successful, and now they're running for governor. That seems to me, I agree with Scott, a more logical progression. And again, you could run for lieutenant governor. You could run for the legislature. You could run for the state senate. That would be so great to get these people in there. And so I tend to agree with Scott.
I mean, let's face it. Patrick Kennedy started at the bottom. Lincoln Chafee started at the bottom. You know, even though they come from these, you know, families, pedigreed families. Jack Reed started running, you know, walking the Eden Park district in Cranston when he ran for state senate. So I think that, you know, to come here from somewhere else, and I understand what they're saying, that look, maybe it is time we turned the page and tried something totally new. And there's certainly an appeal to that. But they're going to have to make it in a manner that connects with people, and they're going to have to drive that message and come up with some very, very sharp and good ideas that will make voters decide, well, we're not going to do the same old, same old. I am willing to take that leap into the deep end of the pool with this guy, whether I have a life preserver on or not.
I have to make an exception with Angel Tavares because his first race was for Congress.
He did run, that's true. He did run.
He did not run for mayor. He did not run for city council. He ran for Congress.
Right. Is there another question? Let's go to this young lady over here.
So far, the race among the Democratic primary candidates in both the gubernatorial and mayoral race have been fairly civilized. Is there a risk?
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah. So my question to all of you is this likely to become ugly and nasty at either level, and on the gubernatorial level, will that help the Republicans?
Well, it always helps the Republicans when the Democrats have one of these teeth on the canvas primaries. If you look back in this state, I've been here since 1984, Joe Walsh, Anthony Solomon ended up getting Ed DePreet elected. 2002, White House, Tony Pires, and Murth York ended up having a very divisive primary, helped out Don Kachuri. That always happens in Rhode Island. However, let me just say, the nastiest race is going to be if Vincent A. Buddy Cianci Jr. gets in. Let me tell you, the Solomon people, especially, it hurts him the most. They are going to carpet bomb this guy. You're going to see pictures of him on TV with an orange jumpsuit. There's going to be courts. There's going to be the city for sale headlines. It's really going to be an instant replay of everything that we ever saw from Cianci. I will say that will be rougher than the governor's race. But the closer you get to Labor Day, you know what happens. The TV, particularly Raimondo, has the money. She's already gone after Tavares on a couple of tough ones on Providence taxes and other things. And I think that's going to get very sharp elbowed also. It mainly is a function of the polls. The closer this thing gets, the rougher it gets.
We have time for just one more question. Let's go to this gentleman here.
I have to agree with the length of time this master lever debate has been going on, because I remember making at the high school model legislature in 19 in 1968 making a speech against about shutting down the master lever.
We had you on the air, man. That's right.
But the one thing that none of the articles has ever mentioned is what percentage of voters use the master lever.
In the Democratic side, it's about 20%. Republicans, even more, I think.
Yeah, about 22%. And proportionately, in other words, because there are so many fewer Republicans, they use it even more, proportionate. So, and you know, it's interesting. In Pawtucket, Donna Nesselbrook was saying that Bush was saying that 50% of her votes come on the master lever in Pawtucket.
Yeah, the
50%.
Urban districts, the elderly, Harold Metz, for instance, the last African-American state senator, 63% of his vote came off the master lever. There also are in this state what I call the old New Deal voters, people in the high rises. They, you know, their hands would burn if they touched a Republican lever, you know, and they think they're going straight to Hades. So a lot of these folks just check the Democratic box, and that's the way it's always been. So I don't think, if you look at this historically, you got any brains, you've been around Rhode Island for a while, you know that hasn't been a determinant factor at the big races. I go back to even 1964, when Lyndon Johnson wins the biggest landslide almost in American history and in this state's history, and John Chafee walks into re-election as governor, a Republican. In 1972, George McGovern gets clobbered by Nixon, even in Rhode Island, and yet Claiborne Pell, a Democrat, beats Chafee. So Rhode Islanders are ticket splitters at the top. Where people argue about this is down at the bottom, the town council, the state rep, some of the school committee races, where people just, you know, pull that master lever and walk out, and it creates some confusion. So,
and that's where it matters in terms of the, right. of
or
the
it
legislature.
Doesn't. Or
we
it
could,
doesn't. No, I don't know if it does.
Republican legislators. I
maybe.
Think if, well,
maybe.
It's
you
got to
run
try.
Candidates.
Or you can have Democrats that really are Democrats in name only, you know, that benefit from the lever. I think the problem, this is going to go away. The master lever is going to go away. Yeah. But what I'm concerned about is what are we going to do with all those people that are going to draw a donkey or write the word Democrat on the paper because they're missing their master lever. They know they won't be able to vote the whole line.
We'll get over it.
Well, on that note, that's all we have time for. Thank you very much.